Welcome to ITAD Talk and part two in this series. Here is your host, Jeff Bittner.
Okay. So another question, are there any reoccurring trends with how you advise your clients, or is it unique with each one?
Well, they aren't unique. What I advise any infrastructure chief that I'm talking to is that, you know, the world they live in is typically highly political. It's a lot of pressure and a lot of stress, and you're trying to do a lot of things with not enough budget. And then it takes a lot of cycles to go the rounds with your vendors that you need. So you're always hesitant to look at other vendors because they always consume all your time with their sales calls and everything. So it's just this double-edged sword where you need to know more about everything. But if you don't have the staff to really do that, or if the company isn't quite mature enough or isn't set up to be really creative, then it can really hinder the infrastructure team from doing that. So it just depends on how they're structured, but most of the time they always need to do more with less.
Okay.
So a couple of good things about the ITAD lifecycle is, you know, it sometimes helps relieve some budget gaps if it's possible. And there's always budget gaps in data center. And so I'm just a guy to help them make sure they get the maximum and safe delivery out of any transaction they need. And then, much like a broker and advisor, I usually attach a fee to the work I'm doing with a guarantee that it more than pays for itself. Many of the vendors that we support, like Digital Realty and Equinix, and the connectivity vendors, they pay us for any of our clients that we help bring in through a monthly fee as well. So I see that as basically my salary from that infrastructure chief, and I follow that chief wherever he goes in his career. But I only want him to deploy any service that's in the best interest of his the company that he is working for and who we serve. So that's sort of how we operate. It's a very close relationship of trust. It takes time to establish, and they're not a highly social group, which I appreciate, frankly, and that's why it's some of the resistance to the sales calls and all that. But at the end of the day, like, we need to know where the bodies are buried. We need to know what fiber is going where everywhere. And,
you know. So you brought up a good question there. So what is kind of the path or the way to be able to reach them then if they're not that social or like on the, you know?
Well, I'm not saying it's hard. It's just you have to show value and then kind of earn your way in. It's just like any, I don't know, man, you know, I've never really thought about it, honestly. But I think, I mean, data center by nature is very proprietary, right? Like, these locations are secret, right? They're under disclosure. Even it would shock you how many data centers, you know, are in a city. But it's just like, they're not a thing you want to publicize, and nobody wants to know who's in what data center. They don't want you to know them. And they shouldn't. And so it is a little bit of something that needs to keep low key and under disclosure. And that means, you know, it's best if they're not highly social people that want to show off their data center to everybody that comes into the city or something.
Okay. So
I guess maybe that's it, you know, and it's probably just common sense. We try to keep it low key and somewhat very professional and discreet. So
what are some of the biggest issues, mistakes, or problems you notice in your line of work among the data center decision makers or teams?
I mean, again, it comes down to realizing most chiefs learn pretty quick that they have a very big challenge. They're often expected to do things with less budget than they have. Deploy into nations that you know might be new to them or something like that, and their ability to reach out and pull expertise from across the industry isn't infinite. It's very finite, and so I would just recommend that, you know, that they have a close group of external advisors that they can leverage when they need, who they know will never bullshit them, and who can dig in and tell them the truth about something, regardless of if they're getting compensated. And that's what I try to be, by just having access to the information we do, and having a few experiences and being able to contact people in an independent way to find out what's really going on in different ways, in different areas, in different geographies. That's huge, just that little information. And that's something we try to do for our infrastructure chiefs, just for free. And then when there's things they provision, if it's kosher with Digirility or Equinix, and we're helping maintain that lease or whatever it takes to keep them going, all these vendors have they have a little bit of broker fee built into everything for the real estate broker or the channel broker, whoever's helping keep the relationship going. And there's parity between their pricing up and down. And so it's really a transparent thing with my clients. They know how much money I make and who's paying me, because they're the one paying me. Mm-hmm. You know, their client, their employer is paying for this service, and built into there is something I have to do to make it all work. Sometimes I'm the rubber to make things smooth, and sometimes I'm the glue to keep things going. But it's remarkable how sometimes these two groups, what the data center groups want, these different teams, the ITAD vendors. And that's why I think it's really hard on infrastructure chiefs. They're not just managing a set of vendors. They're managing a whole life cycle of vendors. You know, it's the Indy 500, and they're keeping the track time down as best they can every day. In the pit room, you know.
So I noticed that there was an overlap between your time as a Russian interrogator with the Army and your time as a product manager for Elemental Business. So were you juggling both tasks at the same time, or was there like a back and forth?
Yeah, well, the stop loss happened with the Bush administration, so I got kind of jerked back. I think that was probably it. And yeah, I think I was stuck in there for an extra few extra years, which was fine. It just 2 extra years, I think. But it was not. Luckily, I never got deployed for longer than a few months. And then after a year or two, they let me out. It was in the National Guard.
Okay. So what prompted you to major in Russian?
Oh, well, I served a Mormon mission when I was right out of high school to Ukraine.
Okay.
91.
All right. And how did the skills you acquired with the Army transfer into sales in the IT industry?
I don't know. I don't think they did. I hope not. I don't know.
So you basically kind of had to kind of learn everything then when you got into that industry.
I didn't fit in with the Army.
Okay.
I knew real quick. Yeah, I think the Army was sort of one of those things like, it was when we get to know yourself better. And after I got my degree, you know, then they really jump on you, try to get you to go warrant officer or something. So I had to really sort of buckle down and decide, you know, where I'm going to head with my career. And I just sort of, the bureaucracy and just the, I needed a little more flexibility, I think, in my career path. So I just, yeah, to me, I felt like it was a little too restrictive for my mind.
So then since you're doing the consulting on the infrastructure, do your customers kind of contact you, or are you still out there kind of cold calling or getting into new contacts, or you just now you've got this kind of range of people that you've dealt with, and so you just kind of stay in that circle?
Yeah, I it's sort of like me trying to get into the Army and then finally getting in and then realizing like I didn't fit. I don't chase. Even if I did, it's usually a mistake. So I'm horrible at it. So I don't sell myself very well at all. And I've never really been a salesperson. I've always been more of an engineer in operations, more of an architect of things. So yeah, I just let people know what I do, and then when they have a need, I help where I can, and I do a few other things on the side that aren't terribly lucrative, but they do make a little bit of money. But mostly I've just paying my bills right now, enjoying Tiburon, running an old home here while my kids are finishing school and my wife teaches, and I'm just kind of taking it quarter to quarter, honestly.
What part of the, you're in the San Francisco area, correct? That's
yeah, yeah, I'm just over the Golden Gate Bridge, kind of on this little kind of peninsula island that sticks down from the Redwood Forest in Marin County.
So I heard that the fires were threatening some of that Redwood Forest. Is that doing a little bit better, or is it still a risk?
It's been pretty, we've had a real good humid coastline this summer. I mean, it sort of makes you feel guilty, but yeah, right on the coast, you get sort of protected with the mist and that coming in from a lot of the smoky air. But I spent a month, 2 months or so this summer in Utah on and off, and battling some of that. But I think the coast so far stays fairly moist, but man, it is really dry. And there was a fire, I think, a few months ago. We had those lightning strikes up in Point Reyes. So that was pretty scary. I've never seen a fire like west of the 101. I mean, I've only been here for 8 years or so, but I've never seen anything west of the 101.
Were you able to hike some of the parks when you're up there in Utah, like Zions and Bryce Canyon and stuff like that? Or?
Yeah, I grew up in northern Utah, so it's all sort of my backyard. Spend a lot of time in southern Utah and down at Lake Powell.
Yeah, I ended up going there with my son. He's our operations manager and vice president here. And so we went there over the 4th holiday, and we hiked Zions. And I'm sure you've been there, but there's that hike up at the top called the Narrows. And you know that one, but you walk miles back in a creek bed with 1,000-foot cliffs on both sides. And walking through water that's anywhere from a foot to 3 feet or 4 feet deep. And you got boulders the size of your fist up to like a foot and a half. And you're trying to navigate that. I ended up doing like, I think, 8 miles round trip in 5.5 hours. And my son did 10. But it was grueling.
Yeah. So. I've been through a lot of country like that down in southern Utah and Lake Powell and different areas. And it can be just fascinating, the different shapes and dimensions you come across as you explore. You know, it really kind of expands your mind, I think. There's something kind of exhilarating about it, you know. Water and the elements.
It's beautiful up there, it really is. Yeah. So is there anything else that you want to add, or you think that I didn't ask you that you thought that you would like to bring out?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, we'll see where this whole thing goes, you know. These industries are continue evolving. Are you specifically focused on just technology generally, or is it?
So we're an ITAD company, but we cater to the data center space. And so we're doing data center takeouts of the hardware. And we're also working with, you know, multinationals where, I mean, we just recently did a takeout where some was in the US and two was in foreign countries. So it was a 3-site takeout. So just as an example.
And I from time to time my clients are looking for, you know, to add additional capabilities on, so it's good to know. I'm slowly trying to add and get to know larger ITAD groups like your own.
Well, great, thank you.
On a quarterly basis. So when you reached out and I realized, yeah, it was kind of a good fit, but this podcast is kind of a cool thing too, because it's kind of, you know, got me thinking about a few things that, you know, it makes us pause and think about what we're really doing here.
Yeah, I was at the ITAD Summit show in Huntington Beach maybe about 4 or 5 weeks ago. And so we were able to kind of meet a lot of people there. And so I've kind of been interviewing a lot of those contacts that we ended up meeting there. So, we really really appreciate your time. And you've got a great breadth of knowledge on many different areas that are really helpful in the infrastructure and data center areas. So we really appreciate you being a guest on the show.
No, I look forward to meeting you maybe at the next conference or something.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And don't forget, the best way to support ITAD content is to rate and like the show on iTunes, Google, Spotify, or anywhere you might listen.